In 1953, a young academic named Russell Kirk published a book that would transform American political discourse. At a time when conservatism was widely dismissed as mere opposition to change, the conservative mind demonstrated that conservative thought represented a coherent intellectual tradition with deep historical roots. The book became an unexpected bestseller, catapulting Kirk to national prominence and giving intellectual respectability to conservative ideas. What makes Kirk's achievement remarkable is how he traced conservatism not as a rigid ideology, but as a disposition, a way of looking at human experience that values tradition, order, and the wisdom accumulated across generations. What unites figures as diverse as Edmund Burke, John Adams, and Alexis de Tocqueville? Kirk identifies six principles forming conservatism's core. First is belief in a transcendent moral order. Human rights derive from duties established by a higher authority. Second comes appreciation for life's variety and suspicion of uniformity imposed by central planners. Third is the understanding that civilization requires orders and classes, not rigid castes, but natural distinctions that emerge in functioning societies. Fourth stands the connection between freedom and property. Ownership provides independence from government control. Fifth is faith in prescription and custom, the accumulated wisdom of ancestors over abstract theories. Finally, conservatives recognize that change must be prudent rather than hasty. These principles function as pillars supporting a cathedral of thought. When one weakens, the entire structure becomes unstable. This vision contrasts with radical thought's belief in human perfectibility and contempt for tradition. As Kirk observed, even without conservative order fully returning, we should still preserve what fragments of civilization we can from the conflagration of unchecked will and appetite. Edmund Burke recognized what revolutionaries missed. Political questions are fundamentally moral ones. While French radicals sought to remake society based on abstract rights of man, Burke defended tradition as embodying accumulated wisdom. He saw society as a partnership, not only between those who are living, but between those who are living, those who are dead, and those who are to be born. Burke's distinctive approach lies in how we access moral wisdom. Against rationalists who trusted individual reason alone, he valued prejudice, prejudgment, as containing humanity's accumulated experience. We are afraid to put men to live and trade each on his own private stock of reason, he wrote, because we suspect that this stock in each man is small. Consider how we navigate daily life. We don't recalculate from first principles whether to brush teeth or which side of the road to drive on. We rely on inherited customs embodying collective wisdom. Burke's genius was applying this principle to governance. Without tradition's restraints, appetites run wild, and people treat the world as property for immediate gratification, destroying what should be preserved for future generations. While Burke established conservatism's philosophy in Britain, John Adams became its American architect. Unlike Jefferson, whose theories were more radical than his practice, Adams insisted freedom requires accepting humanity as it is, not as idealists wish. Though sometimes pompous, he earned trust through honesty and commitment to traditional values, even as he boldly declared, "No democracy ever did exist or can exist." Adams understood that humans fundamentally desire to be observed, considered, esteemed, praised, beloved, and admired by his fellows. This recognition-seeking could be channeled toward virtue through proper institutions. While acknowledging the probable improvability of society, he dismissed the doctrine of perfectibility as fantasy. Progress to him was the slow and painful ascent of the blind led by the one-eyed. His constitutional vision balanced three branches, reflecting natural social divisions. Without balanced government, there could be no true law, and without law, no liberty. Adams advocated a strong executive with veto power, a Senate representing wealth and position, and a population-based house. This system primarily protected the many against aristocratic ambition. Even in supposedly egalitarian settings, classrooms, workplaces, social gatherings, natural leaders emerge. Adams recognized this reality and designed institutions to channel these tendencies toward the common good rather than denying their existence. The Industrial Revolution devastated conservatism's economic foundations more thoroughly than any political revolution. Traditional rural communities gave way to crowded urban centers dominated by factories. Personal relationships between master and apprentice, or landlord and tenant, were replaced by impersonal financial transactions, wage agreements, and time cards. In America, a peculiar confusion emerged when industrial interests became mistakenly identified as the conservative interest, a fundamental misunderstanding that persisted. By the Gilded Age, economic centralization accelerated dramatically. Giant trusts standardized production while depleting natural resources, with lumber barons felling Michigan and Wisconsin's forests and stripping Pennsylvania's coal fields. This economic shift coincided with intellectual changes. Darwin's theories challenged traditional hierarchies, while pragmatism prioritized utility over principle. Edwin Lawrence Godkin, through his journal The Nation, fought political corruption and advocated for better journalism standards, though by 1895 he had grown deeply pessimistic about society's future. We still live with these tensions today, celebrating disruption and innovation while mourning the loss of community and tradition, experiencing the same contradictions that emerged during industrialization. Benjamin Disraeli and John Henry Newman demonstrated that conservatism could be imaginative rather than merely reactionary. Both recognized liberalism as transitional, not permanent, essentially parasitic on the traditional soil it repudiated. Disraeli's reimagining of Toryism saved the Conservative Party after political betrayal over the Corn Laws. His achievement wasn't just legislation, but implanting in public imagination an ideal of conservatism that preserved constitutional traditions. His theory centered on the nation, rejecting both Benthamite individualism and socialist class hostility. He reminded Englishmen they formed a nation guarded by crown, aristocracy, and church. Newman's philosophy centered on the illative sense, the mind's judgment faculty transcending pure logic. Against utilitarians who ignored faith, Newman argued this faculty combines intuition, instinct, and experience to reach certitude. Though opposing liberalism in religion and politics, Newman championed liberal education as intellectual training producing clear, calm, accurate vision and comprehension of all things. These thinkers contrast with today's polarized discourse, where conservatism is often caricatured as anti-intellectual. They show conservative thought can be both profound and creative, preserving tradition while adapting to new circumstances. Amid today's challenges, technological disruption, cultural fragmentation, environmental concerns, conservatism's insights remain relevant. Kirk argues conservatives must recover true community and local energies to counter collectivism. He shows how well-intentioned policies have uprooted communities, causing social breakdown. As Hannah Arendt noted, the rootless are always violent. The conservative challenge involves balancing individualism with community and rescuing modern masses from the sterile modern mass mind to avoid the miserable collectivism engulfing many societies. Conservative thinkers advocate for social coherence, genuine community, voluntary associations, and moral imagination. They reject value-free science, affirming moral order while embracing diversity over standardization. Conservatism offers an alternative to both collectivist tyranny and atomistic individualism. By recovering the wisdom of Burke, Adams, and Tocqueville, we might preserve what T.S. Eliot called the permanent things, enduring principles that make civilization possible and life meaningful. In a world obsessed with novelty, perhaps the most radical act is to remember, conserve, and build upon our ancestral foundations.